from Sports Pro, this is the Playbook Podcast with Matt Rogan.
Welcome to the Playbook Podcast, your fortnightly source of pragmatic advice for how to build better businesses in sports. Today we're going to listen to the leader of not just one business, but two. Tracy Greaves is Chief Commercial Officer of the Goodwood Group, and also the Chief Executive of Kimrara within the group. For those of you who don't yet know a lot about Goodwood, then you need to listen on. It's an absolutely amazing organisation.
We've got 27 different businesses, or P&Ls, if you look at it that way. But I think the most amazing thing was sitting in a meeting in the morning talking about, you know, occupancy of bedrooms and average room rates, sitting in a meeting in the afternoon talking about how many pigs, cows and sheep that we had, and then going on to a meeting to talk about how many rounds of golf that we were selling and what we needed to do.
I wanted to talk to Tracy today for two reasons. Firstly, many organisations in sport have several business models together under one roof, but I've never come across nearly as many as you find at Goodwood. That's quite the leadership challenge, and I was really interested to see how Tracy manages that. Secondly, Goodwood are absolute masters at understanding premium experience. Before COVID hit, I thought there were real signs it was an area changing beyond all measure. I was seeing many different business models and approaches emerging right the way across the industry. There's nobody better than Tracy to help us unpick that a little. In truth, we could have talked for hours, but here's the edited version. Okay, Tracy, thank you ever so much for taking time to join us on this slightly spring-like Friday in England.
Yeah, no, absolute pleasure, Matt. You know, it's fantastic the sun's come out finally, so delighted.
Whisper it quietly. Well, listen, let's kick off, if it's okay, with your arrival into the sports industry, and specifically what you were doing before then, because actually I think your background before you joined the sports industry is really relevant for our conversation today. So your background, as I understand it, was in the conferencing industry and other kinds of luxury venues. Is that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I kind of grew up in the world of what you term entertaining and hospitality. So always been very centered around the customer, whether that was event related or not. And I think the kind of conferencing aspect, the B2B element, was perfectly kind of matched with the more consumer side of things. Mm-hmm. And that really gave me the opportunity, I think, to kind of get a really rounded view, you know, of the business. And obviously in the business we're in, whether it's my previous life or current life, you know, your world revolves around the customer.
Absolutely. And what were your first impressions then walking into the sports industry? How did it feel different? Did it feel ahead, behind? How did it feel?
Yeah, good question. I think probably I got my first taste of that properly at the World Golf Championships. And certainly that was a very different experience from everything that I'd done before. In an incredible group of kind of passionate fans who were absolutely dedicated to kind of the sport that they're following. So I think in moving into Goodwood, yes, it was different to an extent, but I think because Goodwood is both a sports business as well as an all-year-round business, you almost get the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. And I guess I'm fortunate because I've had a very bad, from a performance perspective, a fantastic round of golf at Goodwood. So I feel like I've slightly got the sense of the place. But many of our international listeners in particular might not know too much about it. So can you give us a bit of background? You know, what's it like?
Oh, God, love to. So it's incredibly unique. It's an estate that's over 300 years old. It has six sports at Goodwood, which were all formed by passionate members of the family. So that was, first of all, horse racing, which is over 200 years old. Then motorsport, so a motor circuit was constructed. We've got a World War One aviation airfield, so original grass landing field. We've got the largest Spitfire Academy in the world. We've got cricket, so the first rules of cricket were written at Goodwood. We've got two golf courses, so delighted to hear that you've managed to enjoy one of those. But the James Braid course, which is the Downs course, incredibly difficult if you've played that, but just very spectacular views, I have to say. And then our shooting business, which we do a mix of kind of game and simulator clay shoots. So from a sporting perspective, they are the six sports that really bind Goodwood together, and has been able, you know, enabled us to tell some great stories. But I think in addition to that, we've got a hotel, which is super lovely. We've got a sporting lodge. We've got a private members club. We've got restaurants. We've got the largest lowland organic farm in England. And that's very important to the ecosystem that is Goodwood.
And that was one of the things I guess I was hoping to explore through this podcast, because a lot of football clubs or leagues, or I don't know, cricket, international competitions, or whatever other sport we're talking about, might have three or four primary revenue streams. But in your case, I think you've probably already mentioned 10 to 12. How did you get your head around that to start with when you joined? Did it take you a while to learn all the different businesses?
Oh my goodness me. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've got 27 different businesses, or P&Ls, if you look at it that way. But 27. I think to start, 27. But I think the most amazing thing was sitting in a meeting in the morning talking about, you know, occupancy of bedrooms and average room rates, sitting in a meeting in the afternoon talking about how many pigs, cows and sheep that we had, and then going on to a meeting to talk about how many rounds of golf that we were selling and what we needed to do. I mean, I've been in this industry a long time and I've never worked in a more complicated business. But I think what makes it, you know, really interesting is that you are there. They are many, many different businesses, but they all really have to work as one all year round. Because, you know, if you're farming and you know you've got an event coming, then the guys running the events will say, well, I need these three fields to park my cars. So the farmer's basically got to work out his rotation of animals in fields to make sure that that fits with what's happening in other parts of the business. So if that gives a little bit of an insight into the complexities.
that's a great example. I mean, where do you start? Is there one business of those 27 that you say, right, this is our anchor business, and so this, everything is going to have to revolve around this. We're going to start with this one and then look at the knock-ons and slowly move out from the centre. How do you even start that kind of a project management job?
Well, I think obviously that these businesses have all started at different points in life. So, you know, the Festival of Speed's been running for 20, 27 years. Revival's been running for 23 years. So, at the heart of it, when you started a very big event, then that was the Festival of Speed. You know, that started in 1993. 5,000 people they thought were going to turn up, 25,000 people turned up. And there's just some amazing images of car boots just full of cash because they had nowhere to put anything.
We try and not cover that on this podcast.
So I think, you know, Festival of Speed was certainly the kind of big grounder in how we ran events and how everything else needed to fit into the rest of Goodwood.
So if that set the template, if you like, what if I looked at sort of inside any of the Goodwood businesses, how could I tell it was a Goodwood business? You know, is there something that's consistent in terms of, I don't know, the proposition or the branding or the way you manage the whole thing? You know, how could I tell that this is a Goodwood?
Yeah, I mean, I think, there are many things. You know, Goodwood has a quality, a style about it that when you come in, that you can tell that the customer experience has been really well thought through. So how you're greeted, how people treat you, you know, the quality of a table you're sat at, how you might get your coffee, what that coffee tastes like, that whole customer journey is something that we agonize over constantly. And certainly, you know, if I pick the events as a, you know, a good example, you know, we will spend hours working out where food and beverage should go, the route people come in, where toilets should be, how people can get access to certain areas in a really seamless way. And that shouldn't matter. That process is followed whether we're, you know, opening a new restaurant, running an event, you know, taking guided tours of the farm, whatever it might be, you should feel a certain way when you come to Goodwood.
Well, maybe we can take an example to make that real. So it's been quite a long morning for me so far. So I haven't had my, let's use coffee because I haven't had enough of today. So talk us through coffee as an experience. So yeah. How do you get an identical taste? Do you use the same supplies? What does the customer experience of coffee look like? Just to take one strange example.
Yeah, so we have our team trained by baristas. Okay. We have a very good coffee supplier. All of the machines that we have come from that coffee supplier. And they have been absolutely brilliant at teaching us the difference between the, you know, how we'll make whatever is it, a mocha, how we'll make a cappuccino, how we'll do espresso. But the quality, if you went to the Aero Club, if you went to the hotel, if you had a coffee in the kennels, that should be the same every single time, but not actually just about the product, really as much about the service that you're getting, the greeting that you have. That's equally as important as the taste of a coffee. You know, people will forgive you a lot in life if the people who are serving you are just unbelievably brilliant. And that's what's so important for us.
That's a great example. And for those listening, we hadn't prepped an answer on coffee. Tracy didn't
know. No, that wasn't one of the questions.
Tracy didn't know I was going to throw a question on coffee, but I use it because it could be such a transactional example. And yet to go down to that detail on something as a hot drink you might have during the day, I think kind of makes the point. Let's touch on people, though. You talked about the importance of the service. How do you find those people that are going to represent your brand and make sure that the experience plays through in such? Do you use the same approach for every event, or will you look for different types of personalities to represent you at different events?
So I think, you know, from a Goodwood perspective, we've got really important values, and they are values that we instill in our people. Mm-hmm. And there is definitely a certain type of person, you know, that suits Goodwood. So I think when you asked, you know, are there different types of people? Yes, of course, there are different skills. But I think in terms of the personality of the person that you're trying to find, then, you know, they are quite similar. You absolutely want those people to just love it. To really want to be part of something quite special. And that's how we all feel. You know, we work for the Duke of Richmond, and he is a entrepreneurial custodian of the business, but he has this infectious enthusiasm for Goodwood, and that really penetrates down through the entire business. So I think, you know, for people who are prepared to work really hard, but actually enjoy having lots of fun, then it is the perfect location for them. And I can tell you, no one day is ever the same.
And Ken, in terms of the people that you hire who are representing you at the event, can you be too passionate though? So if I love my cars or I love my horse racing, can I be too much into that and not customer focused enough for you on the day?
I think they actually in the main add colour. So okay. If I look at the marshals who'll marshal the grandstands, you know, they are sharing their enjoyment and excitement around what they're doing. And that actually rubs off on the customer. So in some way, I'd like to think that all the people that work there are really adding more value to the overall experience the customer's getting. You know, we had a lovely example, it must have been 3 years ago now, where it was snowing at members meeting in March. Right. Unbelievable. I don't know how the guys were driving around the motor circuit, and the guys on the grandstands were, you know, building snowmen and engaging with the customers that were there. And they absolutely loved it. You had customers having pictures taken with snowmen. So, you know, what more could you want?
And when you think about, sort of a consistent proposition, and in terms of the quality of experience and things that comes with it, does that play through in terms of the types of organisations that want to partner with you, so for brand partnerships and things. Do you find people coming to you saying, we'd really like to be associated with racing or Festival of Speed? Or do you just keep people coming to you saying, actually, we just believe there's great match between the audience that consume our brand and the Goodwood Estate, and so how do we make that work? You know, how much is it as an umbrella proposition as opposed to a bespoke commercial proposition, brand perspective?
Well, I think naturally they fall into two buckets. You've got, you know, some organisations that really the brand of Goodwood resonates with them, and they want to be part of what we're doing. And actually, our approach generally would be that we'll, you know, meet, have a conversation with you, understand what is it that you really, you know, you're really trying to solve, whether that's a problem or an opportunity or whatever it is, and then tailor to your needs what the right proposition we believe is once we understand your objectives in terms of, you know, audience, whatever it might be, the messaging you're trying to communicate. So I think probably we're quite unique in that sense that we don't just sell a bunch of rights. We sit down, we understand it, and we tailor those to what your needs are. And if that happens to be horse racing or Festival Speed or whatever it might be, that's great. Or actually, it might be an estate partnership because, you know, you want that year-round exposure to the audience that Goodwood has.
Well, I'm guessing when you have 27 different businesses, it makes it fascinating to pull things together that are a blend of those different offers for a brand. At the same time, it makes it really complicated sometimes to think about how you operationalize that. Are there specific areas of Goodwood you found slightly surprised, of kind of you bundled together and actually they work really well? So are there some strange combinations that actually you've put together with certain brands? You go, that just works in terms of the impact we're having on the audience.
Yeah, I think, we have one client who is a sponsor of one of our motorsport events, but also partners with our aviation business. Right. And actually, you wouldn't have thought that watch brand would do that. But when we talked to them and we explored actually the story that they could get into in aviation, they've sort of since developed aviation watches. They've had a Silver Spitfire fly around the world, which took off from Goodwood, landed at Goodwood. So, you know, their DNA of their brand is very integrated into the story that Goodwood is telling around the aerodrome or around the motorsport event. And I think for us, that's the key thing. You know, great brands are all about telling great stories. And I really believe that's what we help our partners do. Brilliantly, actually.
So one of the things I wanted to explore a little bit is how you're able to lead in this kind of environment. It must be a real leadership challenge when you have so many different 27 plates spinning at the same time, plus the ones you're thinking about for the next bit of the jigsaw. So how do you sort of manage across those different businesses, but I guess also into what's still a family organization as well? You know, how do you manage your time and how do you manage those sort of divergent priorities? What can we learn from you?
I'm just trying to still work that out. No. Well, I think, you know, there's obviously MDs in each one of the businesses. And so I think in terms of managing them, I think it's about making sure that you're always aligned on what the objective is of those businesses and making sure that goes all the way down through the line of the teams that you're leading. I think for me, I'm a very kind of people-centric person, so developing people is really important, and I think what's been really beneficial is sharing those broader challenges across all of those commercial teams and getting them to help each other find the right solutions. So I think from a day-to-day point of view, they work incredibly well together as one unit. And I think that's what you want. You know, Goodwood, whether it's 27 businesses or not, fundamentally is one brand. And you've got to have all of those people really focused on you're delivering for Goodwood and one brand. And you've just got you're just a little part of that jigsaw puzzle that makes it a whole.
That makes sense.
But, you know, I think developing the team is equally super important, and the diversity of the business that Goodwood has just enables that to happen.
That makes sense. And I guess you also have a dynamic where at Goodwood in particular, family heritage, right, is such a large part of the proposition and the spirit of the brand as well. We talked to Emily Fraser on an earlier podcast about working with Barry Hearn in that regard at Matchroom. Also a very strong personality, who has very strong ideas of where the organisation should go. How does the existence of Goodwood as a family business drive the way that the business moves forward and the decisions you make?
So, I mean, the Duke is very much at the helm of the business as chairman day to day. And, you know, for him, he is Goodwood, and Goodwood is the Duke of Richmond. And he's, you know, as I said earlier, really, he's got great vision. He's very creative. You know, attention to detail is everything. So, you know, instilled in us is, if it's not perfect, we're not doing it. And I think that's, for me, what I push down to my team the whole time is, you know, it can't be just good enough. If it isn't brilliant, we're not doing it at all. And I think, you know, he's very clear about what good looks like for him. I think back to our values. So I think when you really instill those values, not only in what you're doing, but what your people are doing, when they're bringing work to the table, you know, a new idea, those things are intrinsically built into their thought process. And I think when you've worked with someone for a long time, you understand the expectation. And it can still be incredibly frustrating taking him something that you think is more or less great, and he just tweaks it just one little bit and it's more perfect. I'm 13 years in and I haven't solved that one yet, but that's kind of the beauty of it, is that you do it together. So
maybe we can touch on that making things perfect. And my sense was, as we were entering, just before we entered the pandemic, premium experience and that really top-end experience was evolving quite quickly. You know, if you look at hospitality propositions or anything else, it seemed to be evolving quite quickly. And a generational shift was driving quite a lot of that, in terms of new generations, newly affluent generations, wanting maybe different things from their luxury days out. It would be remiss of me not to ask you a little bit about that, and whether you, in your role at Goodwood, notice things changing and evolving in terms of what people want from premium experience.
Yeah, most definitely. And I completely agree that the shift started to move before COVID came along. You know, there was a real desire for things to be, hospitality, for example, to be much more informal and relaxed. But at the same time, it needed to be more content driven. And I think what I mean by that is, you know, coming and watching, you know, whether it's football or cricket or cars going around the motor circuit is one thing, but that experience, they wanted it to be enriched. So whether that was you were adding a kind of Q&A once or twice a day with a celebrity driver, or, you know, towards the end of the day, you were incorporating some music, or whatever else it might be, that was certainly the movement at the time. And I think now that, you know, we've had COVID, that appetite for premium packages is growing. And we can see that. I think that COVID's proved that there's a lot to life, and that people with that freedom back want to live it. And therefore, there's almost a bit of a Pandora's box that you can open and really start to be imaginative, even more imaginative, about what you could offer a customer than you could ever do before.
Do you think as well that, with the ongoing digitization we've found ourselves experiencing during COVID, and then maybe again a sort of the changes that's driven in terms of putting ourselves in the spotlight with our playlists or whatever else it might be, do you think there's a desire to experience things personally and not be watching only other people going around the circuit, but to go around the circuit ourselves and be part of the experience in some way?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the younger audience probably epitomise that more more than any other demographic right now, in the sense that, you know, they're less concerned about owning something and more concerned about, you know, having those life experiences. And I think, you know, digital in 2020, you know, has been the big winner, because people weren't able to get out and experience things. I don't think for one minute digital will replace live experience in any way at all. But I think what will stay will be this desire of people to have a more immersive digital experience in the future. You know, and you taking almost your physical content and using some of that to really bring to life the experience from a digital audience perspective, I think is going to be really, really important. And I think we saw some of that when we ran Speed Week. You know, mm-hmm. Speed Week happened in October. We ran it behind closed doors. It was the only event that we were able to get away. You know, we really tested and learned some new things we'd not done before from a digital audience perspective, where they could vote, they could poll, they could build their dream garage, you know, they could tap into interviews with Mark Webber or whatever it was. And that for us told us that the expectation is now there, and we've got to find a way, like most businesses in the future, of kind of developing that experience so someone feels like, of course, they want to be there, but if they can't, you need to make it so they're not missing out.
Get the very best of Sports Pro sent straight to your inbox. Head to sportspromedia.com and sign up for the Sports Pro Daily. You'll get a roundup of all the biggest stories, features and opinion from our team every single morning. You'll find that all and much more at sportspromedia.com. Sports Pro, connecting and inspiring the business world of sport.
Well, what's interesting to me around what you've done with the Festival of Speed and also the Revival Festival as well is the way you've used digital it's amplified the tradition that underpins both those things and amplified the tradition that the estate stands for, as opposed to somehow conflicting with it. I'd say, you know, yourselves and Wimbledon are the two organizations that for me managed to blend those things brilliantly. Are there ever areas in the digital, the technology or the innovation space where you think, actually, that's just one bridge too far, you know, it's getting too far away from what we stand for? Or are you up for testing and innovating as far as it goes?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you know, for me, I'm a person that says push it as far out as you possibly can, and then you can always bring it back. Okay. And I think, you know, as I've said, you know, Goodwood might be a traditional business, but the reason that we're successful is that we, you know, we harness that tradition and we turn it in a very modern way in everything that we do. And that's really where that innovation comes from. So I think as long as you stay kind of true to your values, and they're the guiding principle that you always come back to, then I don't think you can go far wrong.
So there's a sort of a sense of restless innovation, it seems to me, in a lot of the events that you run, and sort of never being happy with a fantastic template from the year before, but always trying to push it and evolve it. And I guess that brings us maybe slightly neatly on to the fact that 27 business models wasn't enough for you, and decided, as well as having your role as Chief Commercial Officer at the Goodwood Group, you're also now Chief Executive of Kinraro in the Goodwood Group. And rather than me trying to explain that to our audience, maybe you could say a little bit about the spirit of innovation that's underneath that.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, I think that, you know, we've got 12,000 acres and we're kind of doing all that we can with that 12,000 acres. But Kinraro is really devised to take a lot of the great talent that we've got and look at how we could share that with, you know, businesses and customers around the world. And I have to say, quite a lot of that was driven by customers coming to us to ask mm-hmm. for advice and guidance. And that really kind of kick-started Kinraro as a business. So part of that business is a consultancy business. So we work in projects currently in India, Canada, the US, and so on. And we're really advising, helping build business models, mapping out customer journeys. So taking all the things that make Goodwood incredibly special and sharing that knowledge, that planning, with potential businesses in the future. So mostly at the moment, I'd say it's in the motorsport sector, where we're helping, you know, create motor circuits, private members clubs, memberships, the customer experience. But I've no doubt over time, you know, that will progress. And I think for me, one of the key things I'm very keen on is we created Festival of Speed's Future Lab about 3 years ago, which was really all about embracing technology and being able to kind of showcase that to the audience that we had, and really talking about the future of mobility in its broadest sense. So whether that was flying cars, food of the future, the International Space Station, what a future car would look like, then they're all the things we're showcasing. And I think for me, that's something I'm very passionate about, believing that can travel, because the reaction we've had from customers who've experienced it has been incredible. And certainly, you know, the future of mobility and living is something people hear a lot about, but don't really necessarily get a full immersive experience of what it means. And I think that's something we can deliver.
Sounds fascinating. I mean, one of the things I was looking into Kimura in a little bit more detail, one of the things I thought was particularly interesting was the fact that it's absolutely not innovation and creativity for innovation and creativity's sake. So everything you do has kind of brand innovation and balance sheet right next together. It's always nothing finishes without without making sure that the pennies and the pounds and the cents and the dollars add up. Is that a real challenge sometimes? Because ultimately, you never know quite what innovation is going to pay off, and therefore, you never quite know how to mitigate the risk. You know, how much innovation can any one organization handle, in your experience, at any one time?
Well, I think there's different levels of innovation, and I think around the events they're established, they should be able to be innovated without it necessarily always costing a fortune. But on the balance of that, you know, I think I might have mentioned that we put together this event called Good Woof.
Yes.
So obviously my passion, brand new event, which we yet haven't had the opportunity to launch. But, you know, almost the celebration of the dog, and the best celebration of the dog in the world. And that's something I'm really hopeful will launch as a digital only event this year, and then a physical event next year. But that requires, when you're putting something brand new together, to really make sure that you've got a compelling business plan, because, you know, no matter how big your business, and Goodwood's no different, you know, we cannot afford to create something new, put it on, and then take a bath. You know, it just doesn't work like that. So you really, you know, we really had to put a lot of time, energy, planning into the business plan and the modeling to be super clear about what we wanted. We did a lot of customer research, and that really is the backbone of us being able to create, you know, whether it's Goodwood or, you know, whether it's the new Goodwood Cycling Club that's coming. You go through the same process, and the rigor that I have to follow to get approval from the board is no different, I'm sure, than anyone else's board meeting. So, so you really need to have done your homework and be pretty sure that you can get something away. Even if it doesn't make money in year one, that's fine, but you certainly don't want to be losing it.
Yeah, and I guess that's also the benefit of leading and managing in a private organisation, though, is that you can still have the glint in the eye, and you can still go, you know, the numbers seem to add up, let's give this a try.
Yeah, you absolutely can. But I think, obviously times were challenging pre-COVID.
For sure.
And you could do that. But post-COVID, there's just even more rigor there. But I think, you know, that's the world that we're living in. But for me, you know, Goodwood has always innovated. And post-COVID, we just need to continue to do the same thing, because I think that's what keeps brands young, alive, and wanted by either the passionate fans that you've got or those that you might go find in the future.
So wearing your Kinrara hat for a moment, if you might have, you know, four figures worth of rights holders listening to this podcast, what would your one or two bits of counsel be if they were considering to think about first, if they had something, an innovation or a new extension, they weren't quite sure whether to put the button on or not, push the button on or not. What would be the one or two things we should really keep in mind?
Well, I think the customer's got to sit at the centre of the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, making sure that you understand who it is you're targeting, whatever this product or service to is, you know, how many of them are existing and how many more people do you need to find that look like that? And making sure that you really understand the marketplace that you're dropping it into, I think are all the really good business things that you do before you push the button on something. And I think if there is an opportunity to create a digital first approach to trialing something before you head headlong into a fully blown physical event, I'd suggest that would be a really, you know, really beneficial thing to do, because you learn so much along the way that I think informs what, how you change what sits on the ground.
That's a great response. Thank you. I mean, have you noticed, so you're 27 different businesses within Goodwood, and then you're now leading essentially a service business, or part of the Kinrara proposition is a sort of a service consultancy proposition. Has that led you to think differently about the challenges of running an agency? So all those people-based businesses that serve you, has it given you a different perspective on those agencies and consultancies and things that provide support for suppliers, that provide support for you?
I think it's an interesting question, because obviously as a rights holder and a business owner of what you're doing, and flipping mm-hmm. yourself the other way around, you're actually able to, you know, deliver advice based on your own learnings and your own situation. And you're not just, you know, you haven't come from a business to do that. You're still in a business that is doing that. So almost the value proposition that you're creating is constantly evolving, because the business you're in is constantly evolving. So I suppose from a consultancy point of view, I perhaps see Kinrara slightly differently, in the sense that, you know, it's an extension of our organisation. It's not a sole business sat out to one side. And naturally, with the people at Goodwood, which fundamentally are the key resources that we use to build the consultancy business, you know, then they're learning new things every day that they're then taking into the consultancy business. So I'm not quite sure that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think, again, you know, we form something that's really quite unique, and yet we're probably not very good at talking about it. And so that's kind of something I'm keen to put right.
It's really interesting. I had a conversation last year with Simon Dent, who's one of the founders of Dark Horses, the creative agency, who at the beginning of COVID took a little bit of time out as a team and launched an energy bar.
Oh, wow.
So it's fitness and activity. And he said, you know, even if we hadn't sold a single bar, that process of jumping sides and having a property and feeling the different types of accountability and responsibility made us so much better agency. So actually just having a bit of duality and sitting both sides of the fences, he found was hugely helpful. So what, you spend a lot of time, something like Future Lab, you're looking at what the future might hold. If you play that back onto yourselves, how do you think Goodwood might look different, say, 2035? How will the 12,000 acres look different, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, for Goodwood, it exists to preserve itself. You know, it's been there for 300 years, therefore the job is to make sure it's still there in 300 years time. So I think, you know, in moving forward and progressing, you can't forget about the great heritage and history that the business that you have is built on. I think really it's all about adapting to the future. So how do you stay ahead? Mm-hmm. Sustainability is obviously a really important part of that. And we've got, you know, a very strong sustainability policy and project that we continue to work on at Goodwood. You know, we've got 12,000 acres, which means you've got a lot of trees. So it would be super easy to cheat and say, well, actually, I'm just going to carbon offset it. But we're not doing that. You know, for me, in 2035, we've probably got fully sustainable events by then. you know, the technologies that are coming along, both in terms of power, recycling, the whole waste management side of things. You know, we're working with a number of experts in that space that are helping us really move our business forward in that sense. And I think with, you know, Fuss with Speed in another however many 10 years, 15 years time could be a tech show with cars. Because obviously by 2035, you aren't going to be able to buy a car that is, you know, petrol fueled or diesel fueled any longer. So actually looking at some of those cars that will take part in the Festival of Speed or the revival will probably be in time the only place that you're going to see them. So we've kind of got that forefront of mind. And I think, you know, events like Revival, I mean, we've really focused on Revival, particularly around the whole fashion element being very much about reuse, recycle, renew. Mm-hmm. And that is a very big thrust for the Revival going forwards. You know, there are all sorts of new innovation in fuels there. And the, certainly in the next few years, there is a view that classic cars will run on clean fuel. So, you know, that will then make it, you know, fully sustainable. So I think that part is really important. But, you know, overall, I think the desire for experiences will just continue to thrive. And I think lots of people, you know, if one thing has come out of COVID is that people want to get back to nature. So, you know, we're really focused on creating experiences, you know, whether it's in one of the parks that we've got, you know, tours, taking people out at night under the stars, whatever that might be, they're really that whole well-being side is an area mm-hmm. that we'll focus on quite heavily in the future. So I think, you know, naturally with every business, it needs to evolve. But for us, we've just got to keep innovation at the heart of it and keep listening to the customer.
And of course, the ultimate global dog festival you can roll out around.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
You know, our Sprocker Spaniel's first there, although he won't be able to take part in any classes at all. He's far too badly behaved. so we certainly covered some ground here. Is there anything you see? So if you look into the detail of something like the horse racing circuit, certainly the most beautiful in the UK, glorious Goodwoods, any of the, you know, the cricket facility you have, anything in the more, I guess, conventional sports that you're starting to pick up in terms of the way they might change or evolve going forward?
Well, I think around horse racing, uh-huh. I mean, you know, horse racing is a very unique business. And one of the things that we were key in starting probably a couple of years ago now was a business called World Horse Racing. And World Horse Racing is an amalgamation, a collaboration of five race courses around the world. And the purpose of that really is to be able to tell stories around the broader world of horse racing in general. So that platform it's in itself really talks about, you know, what it's like to keep a horse, the love of those horses, the people behind, you know, the people behind them in terms of the owners, the trainers, the grooms. And the traction that that's getting is, I think, showing a much broader side of horse racing than how people imagine it to be. So I can see that continuing to grow over time and that education process and everything that goes with it, I think will be an interesting future for that. I think in terms of future in general, I think we'll see a lot more diversity. I think things like the W Series, for example, doing 8 races with Formula One this year, and Extreme E has started with a male-female driver. I think we'll see more of that. And certainly as a business, that's something that we've been embracing for probably the last 2 or 3 years. So that's something that we'll do more of. And certainly digital, not just for Goodwood, I'm sure, will play an increasing role in how sports rights holders showcase their businesses, you know, gain fans, and can deliver even better experiences. That, you know, for me, that has to be the way forward.
That brings us right round to where we started our conversation, I guess, in terms of the potency of storytelling to an audience, you know, inside out and back to front. Okay, to close up then we have two questions we like to ask everybody who comes on the pod, if that's okay. And neither of them are that straightforward. So the first would be, if you had one top tip, all the things we've talked about, one top tip for somebody leading an organization, going into the office tomorrow, who needed or thought they needed to maybe rethink their premium offer for the next 5 to 10 years to make it future fit, what would your tip be? What should they, where can they start?
Well, I think, I mean, we've sort of talked about the fact that you need to, you know, you really need to constantly look at experiences. I think for me, it's all about going the extra mile on that experience. You know, don't accept it's enough or it's good enough. Add something to it that the customer doesn't expect, because the minute you do that, then you'll have surprised them, delighted them. And that should be the catalyst for you tweaking, making those tweaks that might seem small to you, but they're really big to the customer and they'll notice them.
Very good. Okay. And then the final question, I try to ask people to sum up their message, everything we've rattled on about for the last 45 minutes or so. If you could sum up your message in 10 words or less for the industry at this point, what would it be?
Oh, God, I'm never good at 10 words. Constantly innovate. Put yourself in the customer's shoes. Map that customer journey and constantly look at it, because actually it can be better. And the more you do that, the more amazing those experiences will be.
Very good. I'll give you that. I temporarily lost count, so I think we'll call that under 10.
We'll call that under 10.
This Friday. Listen, that's been fantastic. Thank you ever so much for taking the time. If people want to reach out to you and get hold of you, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Oh, gosh, drop me an email. So tracy.greaves@goodwood.com. Love to have any feedback, any thoughts, and actually any ideas.
Very good.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks for taking the time.
No worries.
The Playbook podcast is published by SportsPro and is part of a wider series delivering agenda-free, pragmatic advice on how to navigate your organisation through change. To explore the library and find out about the Playbook Lab's Residential Executive Training Programme, head to sportspromedia.com/playbook.